Well, as I mentioned, today is Story Sunday. And if you are new and this is your first time, we're going through a series called 40 Days of Hope. And a few weeks ago when I launched the series, we defined hope as anticipating a future of goodness and beauty. And sometimes it's hard for us to anticipate that future when we're living in our own mess and struggle, isn't it? And so it's helpful to hear other people's stories. And I think that helps us build that ability to anticipate something different, something that's good. And storytelling helps us build this durable hope that we talked about. I mentioned that the psychologist, Dr. Yalom, had a few principles when it comes to sharing stories in group settings that I thought was applicable for us. And one is he said that storytelling gives us an installation of hope, if you remember. And basically what they do is they help us kind of believe that, oh my goodness, recovery's possible, or transformation is possible, or I can have a different preferable future. And it also is this principle called universality that Dr. Yalom talked about. And it's this idea that when we share our stories, we realize that the human experience isn't all that unique, that we one another, we have common stories to tell. And so when we hear them and we resonate with them and we connect with them, we have kind of like this "you too" moment. And I hope that that happens for you today as you listen to three of our friends here that are in our Commonway family that are going to be sharing their stories. My hope is that today continues to help us as a church grow in being able to tell stories and to be vulnerable with one another. You know, it is part of our 7-year vision to tell stories of transformation. And so we want to continue to grow in that. And we want to grow as a community that's safe to be known, that's safe to be able to offer who we are in the moment and know that it will be received with much kindness and grace. I think that's what we would all want if we were to be open with our stories. So, needless to say, it takes a lot of bravery to come up here. Two out of the three, this is not their choice place to be on a stage in front of a group of people, as many of you could probably identify. And not only is it hard to get up here and do that, but it's hard to enter back into a story, especially if it's a story of suffering and pain. And so in order to prepare for today, they had to do that and prepare. So I have much respect and honor for each individual that will be up here. The first one we get to hear from is Leanna. She is a Ball State College student. If you've had the privilege to spend any amount of time with her, your day just gets a little better after you're with her. She has been serving faithfully on our worship team. You may recognize her, as well as in our youth group on Sunday evenings. Three words that I would have to describe Leanna: spiritually hungry, refreshing, and boy, is she determined. So would you give a warm welcome to Leanna Phillips.
Hi, everybody. So I've gotten the absolute blessing and privilege to sing with you all over the last couple of years, but if I've never gotten the chance to talk with you, my name is Leanna, and I'm from Noonan, Georgia. And I already know that you're wondering, because somebody asks me at least once a day, what on earth am I doing here in Muncie, Indiana? Well, I actually came here because Ball State has one of the best musical theater programs in the country. And I decided when I was 14 years old that I wanted to study musical theater in college. I remember I was riding in the back seat of my parents' car, and I said, "Hey, you guys, my friend told me you can get a BFA in musical theater. That's what I'm going to do." And my parents are really awesome, so they were like, "Okay, cool." But I don't think they realized at the time that that meant they would be driving me quite literally all over the United States during my senior year of high school so that I could audition for many different musical theater programs. But we did that, and then Ball State was my last audition. And even though it had been my dream school since I was in the eighth grade, I really, really did not think I was going to get in. Like, I believed that so much that I had already committed to an entirely different school in the middle of nowhere in the mountains of North Carolina. But I just came to Ball State because I wanted a weekend getaway to the vacation destination that is Muncie, Indiana. So then the very next day after my audition, I was watching an Adam Sandler movie with my family when I got the call saying that I got in. And purely by the grace of God, I'm here right now, a month and a half away from getting that BFA that I told my parents I was going to get. Praise God. So now that you know that the Disney version of my story is pretty cool, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the 4 years between that phone call and right now. Starting on day one at Broadway school, I began to struggle with imposter syndrome, which means that I was very afraid that they'd made a huge mistake by letting me in and that everyone was going to find out that I wasn't good enough to be here. But what I was even more afraid of was that I was going to go through all of that and graduate and then not be good enough to get any jobs and have to figure out something different to do with my life. But this was my dream, and so I worked really, really hard. I was 12 years old when I gave my life to Jesus, so my faith was already important to me coming into all of this, but I can tell you from experience that Jesus was not joking when he said that no one can serve two masters, because school quickly became my master. And subsequently, I stopped going to my campus ministry, I stopped nurturing relationships with other believers who were pouring into me, and my pursuit of the Lord was condensed into a brief quiet time in the mornings. The result of that was that I started to struggle with depression, and I got really, really tired from working so hard, and I even began to resent musical theater. I still don't even really know what you're supposed to do if you begin to resent the thing that you're living for. I think that's the definition of hopelessness. So I prayed a lot that the Lord would take this away from me and that he would give me a little bit of fire to start working hard again. Then one day, I met this guy named Joe, and one thing about Joe is that he will be straight up with you, but that's just because he loves Jesus a lot. So I was on a walk with Joe one day, and I'd known him for about 2 weeks at this point, and he said, "I'm concerned about the state of your community." And I was like, "Okay, Joe, first of all, how dare you? And second of all, I don't have time to work on the state of my community." But full disclosure, I really cared what this guy thought of me, like a lot. And the Lord used that to encourage me to invite some of the women from my freshman year back into my life. Here and there, I would have a coffee date with them or a walk with them, and we'd talk about Jesus. And I think God was like, "I love that," because he blessed it really hard. And I really wanted to walk with Jesus again. So then I get to the summer before my senior year of college, a big time. And I was actively trying to follow Jesus at this point, but I was still really, really wrapped up in fear about the future. I had my hands clenched tight around a future that I had decided upon for myself and that I was not willing to let go of. At the same time, I was becoming more and more frustrated with my inability to get rid of some of the sinful vices that helped me cope with the anxiety of trying to force God's hand. But then one day the consequences of those vices became far more threatening. And now I wasn't just scared that God wouldn't give me what I wanted. Now I was worried that I was going to mess it all up on my own. Thankfully, I was at home in Georgia. So within half an hour, I was able to arrange an emergency Chick-fil-A meeting with my small group leader from middle and high school. Her name's Miss Carmel. And I bawled my eyes out to her. And she asked me 3 questions. The first one was, what is the absolute worst case scenario? And because I had been dwelling on that very scenario for a while, I was able to answer her. Then she asked me, what are you going to do if that happens? I didn't like answering that one, but I also knew the answer to that, so I told her. And then she asked me, will you still trust God if that happens? And that one stumped me a little bit. And then she said, Leanna, if you can trust God and believe that he is good, even if that happens, then you will be free. And then after that Holy Spirit mic drop, I realized just how far off from that freedom I was. And I dropped to my knees in my childhood bedroom, and I prayed to surrender everything up to the Lord. And I prayed that he would change my heart so that I could walk in that freedom. As you can imagine, a 9-hour solo road trip back to Muncie is a fantastic opportunity to talk to the Lord. What I gathered from that drive back to school was that my senior year of college was supposed to look very different from the last 3, and I didn't really know what that would look like yet. So one of the really good opportunities we get as a senior musical theater major at Ball State is the opportunity to audition for three different showcases that happen in Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York City. These showcases are a really great way to perhaps book an agent, which is really helpful for getting work after we graduate. But after some tearful consideration and wrestling, I realized that I didn't think I was supposed to audition for any of them this year. And then my first Sunday back at Commonway, I was listening as Matt preached on the parable of the talents, and I began to worry that I was making the wrong choice. So I went up to the prayer team after the sermon, and I told Tyler Crandall everything that was going on, particularly that I didn't want to make this decision and regret it or be idle with the space that it created. So he prayed for me and my decision, and then I felt led to ask if I could come to Commonway Youth that night and just help wherever I could. And then I didn't stop going, and I really like it there. But that was the first thing that God did to fill the time that I had surrendered up to him. On top of that, he led me to start a small group that meets at my house on the weekends, and we watch sermons from young adult ministries and just hang out. He's blessed my relationships with other believers and brought even more friends that love him into my life, and really all around, all the relationships in my life have started to look really different this year. And then I did something really crazy for me. I applied to a program in Atlanta through which I would get my master's in biblical and theological studies, and where I would be contracted at a church for 2 years. This happens to be the very same program that guy Joe is doing. And he had told me hundreds of times before that I should just apply and see what happens, but that was back when I was unwilling to entertain any idea other than my Broadway dreams. But I was starting to feel really differently about it, and that's certainly in part because of this very church body, which I love serving in so much. This really felt like a shot in the dark for me, considering I've been going to school for playing pretend the last 4 years. But throughout the 5-month interview process, God grew and grew my desire to get into it, to get into a program that a year earlier would have felt like the second best option for me. But now I'm really excited to share with you guys that they offered me a position, and I start on May 20th, which is right after graduation. Praise God. Now, I want to be really clear. It's not dishonorable to have a goal and to work hard for it. I think it's really honoring to the Lord, actually. But I was not prospering because of the posture that I had toward my dream. That was idolatry. This is a message of hope, not because I waited a long time or had really good willpower and the Lord finally gave me what I wanted. It's also not a message of hope because he gave me lots of good things. Yes, he gave me a really good opportunity. And yes, I get to move back to my family and also to my boyfriend, Joe. But it would be foolish of me to think that there won't be more hard stuff coming my way. There's going to be failed expectations. There's going to be wrestling with God. And there's going to be disappointments that I have no way of anticipating right now. But hope is not the absence of those things. Hope is being able to walk through those things with an assurance that is only available through Jesus. I want you to consider this question. What is the absolute best case scenario? And I'm not even saying this to be a big nerd. Thanks to sanctification, I actually believe this now. The absolute best thing that could possibly happen to any one of us in the whole world is what Jesus already did. No matter what happens, I can live in the freedom of knowing that I've been forgiven and accepted, and that this life isn't all there is. And because of what Jesus did, I can know with 100% certainty that nothing can change that. There is nothing that can separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus. And because of that, the best case scenario cannot be removed from us. And that is hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Leanna. I think one of the biggest lines that you said that stuck out to me was the question that you said, What do you begin to do when the very thing, when you begin to resent the very thing that you've been living for, the dream that you'd given, all that you've known towards? And I just think your story is an incredible one of what Jesus can do in someone's heart when they present it back to him and say, you choose what I do. So blessed by you, and we're going to miss you so much. You just bring a light to our church, but we're so proud of you and send you the best, and we look forward to the 2 months yet we still have. All right, our second person is Steve. Steve Reed has been attending with his family at Commonway probably since the beginning, I think. And you may recognize Steve if you go by the tech booth on some Sundays. That's where he loves to serve our church, and he does it well. If you're able to have a conversation with Steve, I think you'd find him as a very safe presence and someone who's super thoughtful. I would describe Steve as spiritually genuine, hardworking, and persevering. So would you join me in giving Steve a warm welcome?
Thank you, Lisa. Believe me, these lights are brighter than what you think they are. Wow. This is the second time through that. Hi, everyone. As Lisa introduced, I'm Steve Reed. And if you know me, you probably are wondering what in the world I am doing up here. I'm two, actually. But believe me, I would say believe me, when I'm much more comfortable back in the dark in the tech booth or some other behind the scenes kind of area. So being out here in front, vulnerable and sharing how God has kind of moved in my life in the last couple of years, way out of my comfort zone. But here I am, an introverted, analytical, easily distracted, an impatient dude that's going to tell my story. So this could get really interesting. But at the same time, what's really weird about this is that there's a peace that I have about being here that I can't explain without God. So much so that when Lisa called me and asked me if I would do this, I immediately said yes, which is like so uncharacteristic of me. I would have normally been trying to figure out every way to get out of this. But I also truly believe now that I'm here for a reason, that my faith and my hope has changed so dramatically through some of the experience I had. But we'll get to that in just a bit. A little about me, married to Amy, two kids, Evan, who's a freshman at Ball State, Chloe, who is a freshman at Burris. Like Lisa said, we've been at Commonway since it was back at Union Chapel, off and on, and then made the transition to the convention center. So seen and been here a while. I started going to church regularly when I was in high school, and continued in college. My faith journey is probably not a lot different than a lot of folks. The way that I'm wired, though, my faith takes bumps, you know, when I'm out in the physical world with in nature. When big things happen, like getting married, kids being born, things that I can touch and feel and see, that's just what resonates with me. That is, I guess, until the Rooted experience a couple of years ago, and how that kind of shook me to the core at that point. Now, if you were here or you don't know what Rooted was, it was a 10-week all-church experience where we kind of, it helped us connect with each other, with God, and our purpose. And now I'm going to be honest. I wasn't all that excited or impressed when that first started. Amy hands me the book. For those of you here, I opened it up. First thing I immediately saw was a ton of blank space. Yeah, like they wanted you to write some things. And with that, I also learned that for five days a week, you would read, you would reflect, and then journal about it. And I wondered, what is going on? I'm a doer and a mover, not a reflector by nature, for sure. So I wondered what in the world I'd gotten myself into. I probably was blaming a few folks in my immediate family for that. And, you know, how was I going to do this? I didn't have time to do this. And I, most importantly, was I going to look stupid when I did it? But as you might imagine, and one of the reasons why I'm standing up here, that study started to mess with me, and mess with me pretty quickly, opening up new pathways for me. And my breakthrough moment in that, I guess, as a group was one night we were sharing. I don't even know that I had shared my full story, but like we did in the group. But I opened up about some serious health issues that I had been having over the last several months that I had only really superficially told almost everybody that was around me, except my immediate family who knew what was going on. So for me, that process started back in May of 2021. You know, we were coming out of the pandemic. Life was starting to return to normal and things opening up. All of us were kind of finding the new groove. And I was super excited about the future that I had professionally and some of the things that I was doing. I'd been traveling and doing some work that I love around timing races, and then it happened to me. On the way home from one of those races, I'm in Indianapolis airport, walking out of the airport, when literally something inside me snapped. I don't know what it was. It felt like a snap, and like I said, I can't explain it. My heart started to race. I felt like I was going to be sick. Apparently, I didn't look so good either. Not that that's a normal thing about looking good, but I passed a security guard who stopped me and asked me if I was okay. I lied and said that I was. I made it to my car. I sit there for a little bit, trying to figure out what in the world was happening. This was so foreign to me. So I'm still in shock, I think, not very smart. I drove home and stopping at the doctor's office where they basically just sent me home and said I should rest. A couple of days later, I was at work and it happened again. The world just started to close in on me and I couldn't explain what was happening. A coworker took me to the ER that time, and I was checked in with a blood pressure of 215 over 115. A little bit high, right? I got their attention. I laid there, settled down. You're in the comfort of, you know, all these professionals, and was later discharged in it within a few hours, and just told to go see my doctor. Then, about a week later, another episode. And just because I'm an overachiever, I have to add in all the other things, plus now chest pains and other all kinds of stuff that I don't, I have no, you know, experience with. So we head back to the ER this time. Amy's taking me. And now let me tell you, when you tell the ER folks that you're having chest pains and other kinds of pains, you get their attention super quickly. You get all kinds of special treatment. And so for me, that was a stress test and about a billion vials of blood, continuous monitoring throughout the day. But they didn't find anything life-threatening. And I'm thinking, how can this be? Why am I feeling like this? I can't be imagining that this is, you know, all of this that's happening to me. So if you fast forward a ways even further, as Amy likes to call it, my ER frequent flyer card was punched 4 times, all with the same result. Super high blood pressure, all kinds of weird pain that was kind of life-threatening, but no real thing to, you know, physically anyway, to back that up. The diagnosis at the time was panic attacks with anxiety, which I just couldn't understand or believe. So a few months later, after dozens of tests and all kinds of things, I had later was diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder, more than likely brought on by stress and anxiety, which then also triggered these other events. And if you've been there and you're on that train, you know what I'm talking about, that you just can't get off. There isn't a way. And so I ended up there. So, but again, how is this happening to me, right? Anxiety. I'm a guy with no real issues, right? Some of you can associate. I have a great family, a great job. I've got hobbies. I've got friends. I've got all this to look forward to. Heck, I was even relatively fit back then and, you know, was exercising. So why is this happening to me? Well, as you can imagine, obviously I didn't have it all together. There was lots of underlying issues, you know, that were going on that were causing me to slowly just that anxiety and fear creeping up, and then that snap happened for me. Now, if you know me too, that's something that I just never had planned to share, right? Not because I didn't want to or that I thought I didn't need to. It's just I didn't really think it was necessary or beneficial, right? Something personal like that kind of just staying with me. But the rooted experience changed all of that for me. It gave me a whole new vocabulary for what I was going through personally. And especially when we get into like week four, and I share this with you because it just hit me like right between the eyes. It's where is God in the midst of suffering? I had begun hearing God, you know, speak directly through that. And in the days and the weeks that followed, you learned more about the realities of hardship and suffering, that what feeling alone can do to you, and that you're the only person that feels these things, how to surrender that, and then, you know, developing like a Christ-like character through those experiences. It was just incredibly impactful for me because as an analytical person, I had now a way to process this, all because of that study. So through that, obviously, I learned I have a study or a study. I studied, I guess. I had a story to tell. And even more amazing, every day it seemed like I could share that with someone and it, you know, potentially be impactful for them as well. So where am I today? I still struggle with this stuff. It doesn't go away. But with the help of, you know, great doctors, you know, medication that helps me helps me manage, are doing well. Sometimes I even ask God to remove these physical pains and the anxiety that I'm going through. But you know what? I'm okay if that doesn't happen too. I have surrendered to the fact that this is a part of who I am, and this is the way that God made me. I've learned that through my faith and my hope and my trust in Jesus is stronger because of what I have been through. And if I hadn't, I wouldn't be here today sharing this with you. So a couple of takeaways, I guess, from my personal experience that I thought might be helpful. This is real. It was real for me before, and every day after, it becomes more real. And one of the best things that I did was find a trusted counselor to talk to about these things and how to process them better and rely on that. To take time to stop and reflect. Lisa keeps reminding me about writing and how great that is. And I'm learning. Someday I might be a journaler. I will tell you that what I went back to look for in the Rooted book that I had written was incredibly impactful, and I see God on those pages now as I'm looking back, and so I have to totally believe her that it makes a huge difference. And the other thing, and this is not the part that I'm totally easy with, of course, is being willing to share that with others, because it is, I think, impactful. It's good for me. It's good just to do. So I have hope. Hope in the future and hope from that of where we've been. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. You know, hearing his story reminded me of the words of Paul, Romans 5. Some of you know this verse, when he says, not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, which is just a shocking thing to say, especially when you've walked through something like you have, Steve,
or what Paul did. But he says, because we know that what? Suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance, character, and character, hope. And that's what we hear in your story, Steve. And the hope is continuing, even though your chronic pain hasn't been taken away. So thanks for pointing us to Jesus in that. The verse concludes with, hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit. Our third and last storyteller today is Sasha. I was first introduced to her actually through the prayer concern that came across these white cards for our staff. So we started praying for Sasha and her family, and you're going to hear that story in a second. She and her family are pretty new to Common Way in the last few years. It's fun to see a packed row. Welcome, all Sasha's family and friends. And if I were to describe Sasha, I'd say spiritually attentive. She has an athlete's grit and a very calming presence. Would you welcome Sasha?
This is a much different view for me on Sunday. I'm normally very comfy over there in my seat. But if I've learned anything from following Jesus, it's that God often calls us out of our comfort zone. So here I am. My story takes place throughout the year of 2022. I had big expectations for the year 2022. I had dreams and exciting plans as we were preparing to welcome our third child in August. I was excited to think about our other two children getting to meet their new sibling, and I'd even thought about what the holidays would look like later in the year with three children. I went to bed 12 weeks pregnant with those plans and dreams for this growing little life and woke up to the worst pain that I've ever felt. I had an idea of what was probably happening. Unfortunately, it took a couple of days to determine that I had a miscarriage. And over the course of those days, I started to grieve for a child that I would not get to meet this side of heaven. But I was also pulled to be mom to my other two, and living in that tension was really hard for me. I prayed something that I had never prayed before, and I remember I just said, Lord, you could make this fine. You have the power to complete this pregnancy to term, even if it's medically unexplainable. And that's what I want. I hope that our plans can align, but even if they don't, I want what you want. And God did not answer my prayer the way that I wanted. But he did give me a deeply personal and comforting experience with Jesus through prayer that carried me for the rest of the year in ways that I didn't even know that I was going to need him. The next few months were long and filled with grief for me. It's hard to put into words what it's like to grieve for a little person that you never got to meet and a future that you envisioned for them before you even knew them. It was a profound loss. And those of you who've experienced that, you know what I'm talking about. Even in my grief, I found comfort in the fact that Jesus knew who they were, even if he was the only one. Throughout those next few months, I was living Romans 12:15, weeping for myself while rejoicing with four of our friends who were also expecting children around the same time that we were. God taught me a lot while walking through that valley of pain. Months later, we got the exciting news that we were expecting again, and I was excited and scared. I was worried, but I was trying to put my trust in God. I wanted so badly for my prayer to be answered with a yes this time, but the reality was that it might not be. And I had to trust that he was still worthy, even when the outcome was pain and not celebration. or no instead of yes. Despite having some concerns about the pregnancy early on, I was cleared from my specialist, and I was actually cleared to go with my husband for a weekend to Nashville, Tennessee on a work-related trip for him. And this was at the beginning of December. Instead of a relaxing weekend, I found myself on the phone with my on-call OB, and I was being instructed to find an emergency room. I'm in Nashville. I'm 29 weeks pregnant, and I have no idea where the closest hospital is to me. And I just remember hanging up, and I'm just praying, oh, God, just show me where to go. I have no idea. So I Google emergency rooms near me, and 20 minutes away, I find an OB emergency room. And that sounded exactly like what I needed. It's like, thank you, God, for making that so clear for me. We headed to the OB emergency room. We had no idea when we walked through the doors to the hospital that that would become our home away from home for the next 2 months. After tests and monitoring, the midwife came back in, and she said, you need to be admitted until you give birth. And as you can imagine, aside from the hyperventilating that I was doing, we were filled with questions. Even thinking about it now just brings back all those anxieties that we had for the unknown. We had two children that were back in Indiana. They were 5 and 2 at the time. We were both working full-time. We had to contact our employers. We were concerned for our unborn son and if he was going to be okay. And we just generally had a lot of questions about how God was going to provide for us in this crisis. Word got out about our situation, and one by one, God started answering every question and concern that we had. While this was not a part of my birth plan, to be stuck in Nashville for an unforeseen time, I was confident that God was knitting our little guy together specifically for this time and this journey ahead, because nothing surprises God. Damon arrived 9 weeks early on December 21st. We knew we still had a long road ahead for his NICU stay. There he is, all 3 pounds of him. Even though God was providing for us in the most amazing ways, walking through that valley of the NICU and being in Nashville was unbelievably hard. It's a helpless feeling to just visit your newborn. It felt unnatural to me as a mom to not be the person that was providing for him and to have these designated times that I could visit him and hold him. One night in particular, I was struggling to leave Damon and to leave the hospital. And my longing to find comfort, I took some time to pray. And even though I couldn't be present with Damon at all times, I knew that I could be present with Jesus at all times. And as I was aware of his presence with me, I remembered the experience he gave me after my miscarriage. And I asked again if he would just meet me in this place of pain and desperately wanting hope. I needed to know his posture with Damon and that he was with him even when I couldn't be. And even now, standing up here, I can still see the presence of God watching over Damon and knowing that he was not alone in his isolette, even when his dad and I were not there with him. And God was so gracious to give me that. He not only did that for me, but he also showed me that he was providing for me with people he was placing in my life. The NICU is a whole new world. It's hard to describe the time spent in there. The visiting aspect, the information that you're being given and you're trying to remember, and the advocating for your child, it's emotional and exhausting. Thankfully, God had placed a very special person in our lives a few years earlier, my sister-in-law, Cassie. She's a NICU nurse at Riley Hospital. And throughout our time in Tennessee, she became our personal NICU advocate and expert. And one of the most amazing ways that I've witnessed God work in Damon's story and our time of being in Nashville is watching a seed of faith start to grow in her life and the life of her young family. Cassie did not grow up in church or have a background in faith. And since Nashville, Cassie and I have had many conversations about Jesus. She started bringing her family to church, and she's continuing to develop her relationship and her prayer life. It's been an honor to witness her growth as a new believer. And I'm so thankful God placed her into our story, but also that he used our story for eternal work in her life and the life of her kids. After 45 long days living off of God's provisions in Tennessee, we were headed home to Indiana to complete our family of five. Here are my guys. This is the first time the big brothers got to meet their little brother. The boys couldn't come up to the NICU. So up until this point, they'd only seen pictures and heard stories about this little brother they supposedly had. So this was a really special moment for us to introduce them finally. It wasn't exactly smooth sailing once we got home. Damon was admitted for a respiratory virus, and he also underwent surgery. And some of you remember that. Thank you so much for sending us meals and for praying alongside us during that time. If we fast forward to today, Damon is one. He's still small but mighty. Here he is. He's thriving on his own timeline. He has a toughness that's hard to explain, probably more obvious to those of us who know what he's gone through so far in his life. He has a smile and a presence of joy that constantly reminds me how good God is. 2022 did not turn out the way I imagined it to be. And even though it ended with a baby in my arms, that didn't take away the lingering loss of a baby that we never got to meet. It was a year of grief and great loss, blessings and joy, heartache and uncertainty. And looking back, I can see Jesus through all of it. He led me every step of the way, even when I couldn't see the path in front of me. And as I reflect back on that path, it's proven to be one of ongoing healing, strength, and abundant provision. Meeting Jesus in my valleys has changed my relationship with him forever. Knowing he's walking with me and never leaving me gives me hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha. Thank you for trusting us with something so deeply personal and hard. She mentioned to me a book that was very helpful to her in grieving the loss of their child. It's called Held, 31 Biblical Reflections on God's Comfort and Care in the Sorrow of Miscarriage. So I wanted to be sure that I offered that to any of you that might benefit from it.